Support for the Players, the Pop Culture as PlayStation podcast, is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the ultimate men's hygiene bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FTP at au.manscaped.com. If my math is correct, and it might just be, that's about 8 million balls. For the Players, the Pop Culturist PlayStation podcast is fueled by The Manshake. I lost 30 kilos in 10 months using this meal replacement shake. If you want to support the show and Max in my weight loss journey, or to even start your own, click the link in the description below. The Manshake. Real blokes, real results.
For the Players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For the Players, the Pop Culture as PlayStation podcast. The 40 years of playing PlayStation and 10 plus years in that games media combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review, which can now be done on Spotify. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to give us a like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can. You can go over to our Patreon, patreon.com/thepopculturist. Merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. Or you can help support the brands and help support us, just like our friends over at Manscaped. If you go over to au.manscaped.com, use the promo code FTP, you save yourself 20% off and free, yourself some free worldwide shipping. But we'll get to that a little bit later. How are you, sir?
Too bad, man. Not too bad.
Yeah, so we're recording late on a Sunday evening. We had both had a very busy weekend, and things kept getting pushed, so here we are. We're not doing it live either, mostly because of the late notice, and we didn't want to throw the viewers' time out, and mostly because we were lazy. But yeah, it has been an exceptional weekend for me. I actually had a really, really good time. How's your weekend been? How's things?
Not too bad. I didn't get up too much this weekend. Had my mum down throughout the week.
I discussed last week. Nana Kay coming down
to help out. That was awesome. So I took her back to my sister's place on the Thursday. So all I've done all weekend is play Elden Ring.
We'll get to that soon. So
all I've done.
I'd love to. Much. I'm very keen to talk more about Elden Ring. But yeah, I myself have had a fucking jam packed weekend, man. It's been absolutely fantastic. So, what happened? There was something happening Thursday, because everything started on Thursday. That's right. So Thursday we had AEW Dynamite with Craig. He and I watch it as we normally do, a little friend date, where we have dinner together and we watch the wrestling. Friday then was Jim, you know, one of the other Popsy members, the co-host of The Young and the Wrestlers. So she came over. She stayed with me for the weekend. We were going to go to the Foo Fighters concert that was here in Geelong. That was the original plan that Max got shortchanged these Nitro Circus tickets for. We couldn't get tickets. However, on the Saturday was my good friends DMDU, Deathmatch Down Under, were doing a show in Geelong. So we went out on Friday night in the rain, handing out flyers to people and just sort of trying to go, hey, if you're in Geelong for the weekend, you went and saw the Fooies and you want something to do that you've never seen before, come see some Deathmatch Wrestling. So Gem and I are standing just like handing out, being all energetic salesmen, like giving flyers out and stuff. Apparently it worked to move like a bunch of tickets. So at least, you know, within like from the time that the concert started till the mid-afternoon of the next day, they moved a bunch of tickets. And they said it was because of Gemini, and I'll take it. So yeah, then Saturday, I put my hand up to help out the crew on the day. So I was part of the ring crew. I helped build the ring, get everything set up. I was involved in some of the weapons construction. So the opening match of the night, with it being a death match, was a no rope barbed wire death match. So where all the ropes around the ring were replaced with barbed wire. Part of my job was to build the barbed wire, as in to build the ropes. That was interesting. That was fun. So then I watched the show and had an absolute blast. The show is absolutely fantastic. And the Palais Theatre here in Geelong, dude, have you ever been inside?
Once.
Oh my God. It is beautiful in there. It's like a real old school, like, theatre feel. Mm. There's lovely balconies, you know, where we had like masks for the two commentators we're seeing up there. So they look like, you know, Sattler and Waldorf from the Muppets. You know, someone climbed up there and did a big flippy doodah off it into a crowd of people. It was a tremendous night. I had an absolute blast. And because it was in Geelong, unlike when it's normally in Melbourne, I was able to have a few drinks, sort of loosen up a little bit, get nice relaxed. And then once the show ended, I wasn't going to. My original plan wasn't to help out, but you know, they had to move it real fast. So then I start pulling up part of the ring with them, and I start moving stuff out in the truck. And also, during the day, I was dressed in just like standard clothes to get dirty, but I dressed up a little bit for the night. I'm like, hey, it's a nice theater. I'm gonna get my drink on. I'm gonna feel nice. So put a nice shirt on, some nice pants and shoes, and here I am fucking hiking parts of a wrestling ring to a truck. That was awesome. And then a handful of the crew and some of the wrestlers came back to my place. We all had a few drinks and just sort of chilled out till early in the morning. And then today, I was left feeling a bit dusty, a little bit rough, a bit worse for wear, because I haven't had an evening like that in a very long time. Pardon me. But I thoroughly enjoyed myself. So I've had a very good weekend. And then, so tonight, of course, I'm recording with you, Max, which I'm a big fan of always. And then I have Monday night, so day of this airs, I will be doing AEW's pay-per-view, Revolution, with Craig and friend Dylan. And also today I did my fantasy football draft, which, because I've not paid attention to any sports over the last year, I have fucking no idea who half the players are, or even, like, because all the ones that I would have normally picked have all retired, because I've been doing this for 9 years now, and I'm just kind of guessing. It's really fun when you can narrow people just down to, like, numbers. Their entire performance in a sport, simply down to numbers. Do you know a big sports guy, Max?
Yeah, it depends on the sport.
Is there a sport that tickles your fancy?
I actually don't mind soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I watch it every time the World Cup's on. I'll get up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, watch some soccer.
But why soccer? What is it that grabs you? What is it that grabs you?
Honestly, I have no idea, because soccer is one of the most boring sports to watch.
See, I love baseball, right? But baseball and cricket are near on similar. But cricket sucks. I hate cricket.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. Why I can like one more than the other? Oh, and of course, you know, speaking of cricket, this week, you know, Australian cricket legend Shane Warne passed away. Known for like, you know, smashing tinnies and hitting on birds on Instagram. So like, shout out to Warney for those that are cricket fans. I know there's quite a number of people in the Australians that love Shane Warne. I remember him most prominently in terms of, because I don't really care for sport, in Kath and Kim, where he married Sharon, or Magda Skibansky's character. They pashed really hard. It was beautiful. So
totally forgot about that.
I know, right? It's so good. Oh, but look, we may not give a shit about sports, Max. One thing you do care about is games and playing them. You've mentioned that you've pretty much exclusively played Elden Ring this week. I've dipped my toes into it as well. Let's chat.
I'll preface it with I finished the rest of the Witch Queen campaign. Mm-hmm. About like literally after we finished recording last week, I think I smashed out the rest of it. I had about 3 missions left. Dude,
that's a bit disappointing. It's not very long.
It took us 8-ish hours. To do nine-ish hours.
That doesn't seem like this is a big expansion.
And that's just the core missions. there's obviously more lore and more stuff to do after that in the respect of.
Then there's the raids and stuff. You know, as well,
The raid has since dropped. There's the three exotic weapons to go grind for and do extra story content that way. Mm. Like, there's still stuff to do. Really well done. Storytelling was great. I thoroughly enjoyed playing. Noodle and I two-manned the entirety of Legend mode, which is like the hard mode for the new campaign, which allowed us to skip the soft level cap. So we upon completion of Legend mode, you get a full set of 1520 gear.
Mm-hmm.
The new cap is, I believe, 1530. So we got bumped straight up, which was awesome. Made life a lot easier. It takes away a lot of that grind, which is cool. Very strong campaign missions for Witch Queen. I haven't enjoyed a new expansion so much since probably ages ago. I can't even remember the last time that their story missions have been this compelling.
That's good. That's very good.
The new characters that they introduced were awesome. Or the whole new area that, you know, the Witch's throne area is awesome. So many different biomes, the way they've changed the enemy typing around, the way they've given the Hive the ability to use the light and what that means for us as Guardians, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's never fun having a Hive Knight throw a bloody shield at you from out of nowhere. That kind of sucks, but the boss fights were really on point for the campaign. The last few have been really lacking. You kind of just stand there and shoot them and you don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
There was, each one had their own kind of mini mechanics to get through the stages of the fights, and you had to do certain things before you could enter the damage phase for the boss. It was kind of like a mini raid encounter sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, made it fun. It wasn't just kind of, to use the old school term, tank and spank, where you just stand there, tank the hits, and just keep hitting them until they die. Yeah. There was things you had to do to progress the fight to hit those damage sections, which was awesome. But yeah, as I alluded to earlier, the main thing I have played is Elden Ring. So last weekend, I think I put about 10 hours in. I'm now sitting at just shy of 40. With the majority of the gameplay coming from just this weekend, I'm now sitting at character level 120 something. For context, I was level 12. Damn. Last weekend when I spoke about it.
Yeah.
I was level 60 last night, or at the start of last night, and I hit level 120-ish this afternoon. I have been grinding hard. I've beaten about 5 or 6 of the lords now, which is cool. Done a few of the secret side areas, done almost all of the NPC side quests that I've found.
Mm-hmm.
I have been hitting my head against a brick wall, so to speak. I'm at a point in the story where I have to beat a boss to progress, and for the life of me, I just cannot take this bastard down. I get it within like one fifth of a health bar left, and then I just stupid mistakes or mistiming things just end my whole career, I guess.
Yeah,
which is, it can be frustrating, but then I go, hey, I'm just gonna go do something else for a bit. I'll kill another few bosses somewhere else, come back, try it again, get a little bit further. So it's not too bad. That's the one benefit I am finding to this game being so open. Despite the fact that I cannot progress further in the story until I beat this boss, there are still things that I can do that give me that change of scenery, so I'm not banging my head against the same wall over and over again. I can go bang it somewhere else for a little while and then come back.
No, look, I'm in a similar space. Now, admittedly, so you picked the game up yourself last week. There was a code in our inbox on Monday morning. So big thank you to the team over at Bandai Namco Australia. They were meant to get it to us on Friday. And with all the chaos, we slipped through the crack and we got a lovely message from the PR rep being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Here you go. So that's how I've been playing it. Now, admittedly, I've put near on no time in it because I had a very busy week. Played a lot of Horizon. We'll talk about that in a moment. And then another game as well. But so this is where I'm at, Max, when it comes to Elden Ring. So I boot the game up. And it is just a Dark Souls game. Like, it's unquestionable. It's a fucking Dark Souls game. That's all it is. Like, if there's any cell that it isn't a Dark Souls game is just fucking straight up lying. But thankfully, no one's really trying to mislead anyone going, hey, there's a couple things that I noticed straight away. It looks fantastic, for one. Now, I'm playing the version that prioritizes the frame rate because I feel that's, like, for someone like myself who isn't as good at the game as, say, yourself, the frame rate would be an actual advantage to me. It would allow me
You want to prioritize the frame rate,
yeah.
Anyway, in my opinion,
because like when you want to be able to try have that extra that even that what that perception of extra time, I think is a big factor. So it drops you in, gives you a bit of a lore at the start, and then like kind of gives you no direction. It's like you wander around. So I kind of go for a little wander, do what I got to do. I'm like, hey, this looks like the beginning of any Dark Souls game. It's gritty, it's dark, it's bleh. You know, it's just whatever. Pardon me. Controls the exact same, plays the exact same. Okay, whatever. I picked a Vanguard as my class, mostly because I have no idea who any of them are. And the Vanguard was the first one. And it seemed the most reasonable for me to pick. It was just to do with a sword and shield. Pretty good strength. Pretty good base HP. At least comparatively. Sweet. I picked up a reinforced flask as part of my starting state. Which I think I should have chosen the extra HP one instead. But whatever. What are you going to do? Yeah. And then I proceed to do okay in that opening area. Like the game essentially drops you and you have to wander through this cavern to sort of, it gives you the basic rundown of the controls, essentially a tutorial room. Now I'm talking to the audience here, Max. I know you're looking for. So it's a tutorial cave. You sort of go into, hey, stab this person. You just learn how you dodge, whatever, whatever. And then it ends, it goes, hey, it puts you in a room, boss encounter. I don't know whether you're supposed to beat that motherfucker because he kicked my face in.
So, like in every Souls game prior to this, always started off with a boss super early. It's designed to kill you and then you spawn somewhere else. But if you beat it, you will get a special item.
Mm.
So, in this case, if you beat it, you get its sword and shield.
Oh. Well, that's not going to happen.
It's doable. It's not easy, though. It's easy if you pick the samurai starting class. Samurai starting class is stupidly broken. They start with a katana. Katanas deal bleed damage in this game. So after a few consecutive hits, basically the boss's health bar just chunks down from blood loss.
I'm starting again.
And from what I can tell, almost all the enemies at the start of the game bleed. And they just go, and they just take a massive chunk of damage.
Okay, well, I'm not too deep, I might change.
I'm like mid to end game. I am still using a katana. Now, granted, mine's fully upgraded now, but it is my weapon of choice.
Was that the class that you selected?
No, so I selected, I believe it was called the Prophet.
Yeah.
So basically, I started in rags. I was in a head noose type, like a wooden block. And I was basically like a churchy dude.
Yeah, because I remember you saying, yeah, you were providing the power of religion with your fists.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that I know the classes, it's helpful.
I basically got rid of all of that and respec'd into a sword-fighting mage.
Very nice. Very well. I'm glad to know it can respec that well, which is which is cool. But yeah, so then once I get my ass handed to me by this boss, which is to be expected, it then transitions into like a lovely cinematic, and then you wander out into, what's it called, Limgrave. There you go. So you walk out and it's like, oh, and not in the quite same like effect as Zelda Breath of the Wild when you walk out of that tunnel for the first time, but there's very clear like, look at this scope, and then like you see all these lovely hills and there's the tree there and it looks fucking fantastic. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I walk out and I poke a fucking, what are they, essentially the bonfires after, and I poke, sweet.
Yeah, the Sights of Grace.
Sights of Grace, yeah, I poke, I go, fantastic. And then I walk over and I chat to some dude who's like, hey man, you look one of like these people that die all the time. I'm like, I am. And then I proceed to walk down the hill and there's some motherfucker on a giant horse. And he looks at me and goes, hey. And I go, hey. And then he crushes me with the giant axe. So then I tried it again. And I tried to dodge. Turns out, I don't even have to be near him to be hit by the axe. Rad. So I go and I'm like, well, rather than dodging left, maybe I'll dodge right this time. Dodge right, horse tramples me. I'm like, okay, not fun. Let's try it again. So I go in for, I try to go in like as he goes for the swing. I'm like, I'm going to duck under him. I dodged one. I'm like, sweet. And then he backhands me. I'm like, what the fuck is this nonsense? So I, look, admittedly, I gave that probably a lot longer than I should have, knowing the world is open. I could just walk around him. But this is part of my problem with my brain, is it sees that enemy and goes, I can't walk past him. He's clearly there for a reason. And I am compelled to face him because I feel like if I skip him, I'm playing the game wrong.
For context, this guy is the Goomba in level 1-1 of Super Mario Bros.
Yeah.
He's designed to sit there and kill you straight away. Could just jump over him, walk around him, leave him to his own devices, and come back later like I did and shit on him in one hit.
Yeah, but unlike Super Mario Bros. Where I eventually can just jump and smush him. Like, it's not a difficult villain, a creature against you. Like, you'll fuck up a couple of times, but there's one way to beat it, and it's super easy. Where here he's like, no, I'm just going to pound your face in. And then admittedly, I went, yeah, fuck this noise. And I just put the controller down. I was like, you know what? Because like I could feel the rage in me. Because I'm like, I understand the game is designed for this. But I can't help but look at this and go, I know you're here to crush me. But there's no other enemies around. I guess I just have to... Because the game doesn't really give you direction. Like when you poke the Essence of Grace, what the fuck it's called. And it does like this kind of like sunbeam. It goes, hey, go over that way, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess I'm just gonna have to go around this dude and then like keep wandering. That might be the safest place.
I mean, you can turn around and go backwards. You don't have to follow those.
What do you mean go backwards? Things. If I go backwards, it's the castle. There's nothing else behind it.
You can go to the left, you can go to the right. There's so, like, honestly, in that first initial area, there's so much stuff around you that you can do straight away. It's mind blowing.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Look, I like some direction. Complete sandbox ain't good for me. Some go direction is good.
And then you just explore. Like I said, I spent the first 8 hours of my gameplay just exploring. I didn't kill anything. Didn't care if I died. It was just, I'm going to go and open the map up. I'm going to go see what I can see. I'm going to see where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to see where I shouldn't be.
But I'm going to see if I can
kill shit where I shouldn't be.
And I guess this is just me and the nature of the games that I like to play. Because you're like, hey, I'll just go look around and I'll find the things that tell me, you know. But I look at the world and I go, I don't know how to tell what is required, what is the necessary objective. Because there is no objective markers, or at least from what I've played so far. You said you can mark them yourself, but it's not like, hey, the big boss is over there. It doesn't give you that. Like, once again,
Those rays that come off the Sights of Grace, they point you towards the bosses that you need to fight to progress. Okay. That's what they're designed for. There is a very loose thread to go through, and sometimes it's a bit of a fucking stretch, and I'll admit that. Because not all Sights of Grace will provide you with rays. Only some do. So you've got to hit as many as you can, and then when you open your map, you'll see essentially yellow trails coming off them pointing in a direction. And then when you see three of them pointing towards the same objective point, you're like, ah, I've got to go that way.
So
yeah, look,
there's there, but they're few and far between sometimes.
It's a tough balance that I have with I don't even think it's the game itself. The game I love in concept. I like the idea. I don't have the patience and or skills or ability to be any good at it. But like, I guess it's even looking at the whole conversation right now around, across the internet around Elden Ring and being like, it's a circumstance of like, what, get fucking good? Or like, oh, this game has antiquated design. Oh, isn't it so good for it? I'm like, no, it isn't. Like, there's things that are really good in current games, and they're there for a reason. And it's not as if they're like, oh, these were inconveniences. Like, no, they're things that made games better over time. Like, there are just small things that make games better, whether it be like objective markers and stuff. Now, granted, as I have not dicked about and as much as say yourself, and I love, I don't mind the idea of having to have a notebook or something to sort of help, and that is fun. But like, we have progressed further than that. And I would argue that a lot of the fan base for this genre of game, for this style of game, is they just like to be contrarian. Just like, oh, this game is better because it doesn't have these things. Like, not just make it better at all. It's just it doesn't have them. And that's shit. Am I wrong? Because it does feel like it's the, yeah, it's not about, like, it's not about playing the game together and getting better together. It is literally a series that is all about how good you are compared to somebody else. And I hate that.
I mean, to a degree, you're not wrong. But pretty early on, they're like, hey, you need to go to the castle. So you've got an idea of where you got to go. Mm. And you'll know that there's a boss in the castle. And once you beat him, you kind of, everything opens up and the whole thing changes. It's great. And then you obviously from there there's a location that you get sent to, and you talk to all those NPCs, and they kind of be like, hey, these are the names of the people that you need to do. This is the rough area that they're going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Go and find them. Go take them out. Once you've taken them out, come back, see me. I'll let you know what's going on next.
Yeah,
like it's there, but it's not like you're not going to get the big yellow thing saying, hey, I'm over here. Come and get me.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like the waypoint's 1.8 Ks away in that direction. Go for it.
Yeah.
Like,
look, see,
that's not what it is.
I understand that people's comments around like that is like essentially an easy, it's like, hey, it's telling you where to go. I'm like, yeah, it's good. But like, even right now when I'm playing Horizon, which we'll talk about in a minute, like it goes, hey, the marker's over there. It's X amount of fucking Ks away. And I go, cool. I know that that is there. So I don't just golden path it. I'll fuck ass around the whole way through. But just having that is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it's a different kind of feeling. Like if I could just go, hey, that's where you need to go. That's what you got to do, which apparently sounds like it sort of does, but it doesn't. It's like, hey, it's in this approximate direction. I'm like, fuck that noise. I don't have time for that. But it's just like, hey, look, there it is. Get along the way. Even side quest markers are cool. Like I'm not going to explore. Like, because look, admittedly, I am very burnt on fucking open world games in the idea of like, ooh, what's around this corner? It's nothing. 9 times out of 10, it's fucking nothing. I hope Elden Ring's different as I begin to explore it further. Like Horizon has done a pretty good job. There's at least something interesting. There's a fucking herd of creatures, machines. Even if I've already seen them, they're there. And eventually they start to annoy me more than anything. But, you know, like as the game progresses, it's like, hey, there's something over here. There's something over there. Not like The Witcher, which I felt was too much. Oh, this is just me. Why am I just ranting and being a bitch right now? But they, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's like, it's not a complaint about Elden Ring specifically, because I know if I was better at the game, these complaints wouldn't exist.
I mean, this is coming from somebody who's, 40-ish hours in. There's a lot to do. But for the most part, it's just all the same.
Yeah.
Like, the way they've split the game up is there's the open world, which houses your field enemies, your field bosses. So, for instance, that guy on the horse you're talking about, he's a field boss.
He's a prick, but yes.
He in no way impedes your movement unless you choose to fight him. You can just walk past him and eventually he'll stop chasing you. there's dungeons. In dungeons, there's always a boss at the end of the dungeon. The boss is in a boss room. Therefore, once you're in that room, you cannot leave until either you die or the boss dies. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get like a sweet piece of loot. Might be some armor, might be a weapon, or a new summon ally, or a new spell, anything like that. And then they have what they refer to as legacy dungeons, which are more akin to the big areas recognizable from previous Dark Souls or Soulsborne games. So they will have multiple bosses in an area. They will have big open areas to explore, but they're still self-contained. Mm-hmm. For instance, the castle that you get sent to at the start, that is, they refer to that as a legacy dungeon. It's got about 3 bosses in it from memory. And they're all in their own boss rooms. And from there, you can continue on. Generally, the legacy dungeons are what house... Pardon me. Are what house the big bosses that you need to beat to progress the story.
Okay.
I've done about 4 or 5 now.
So it does look as if I'm just being complaining for no real reason.
I mean, but if you miss that line of dialogue, you're not going to know.
Which I guess I can't. I kind of must have, right?
And like, if you're just kind of nexting through the dialogue, if it's not, you know, intriguing you, it's not hard to miss.
Yeah,
and like the story doesn't really open up until you get your horse and you meet the maiden, and you don't meet the maiden until you've activated 3 sites of grace. So you haven't even got that far yet. Like you're not even at the point where you can level up yet. Do you have your horse yet?
No, but like, isn't there 2 sites of grace in the opening area, and then the 3rd one when you walk outside?
They don't count. It's only the from once you leave the area.
Lame.
Yeah.
Okay, but I get that though.
So you know the you're still missing some information before you even start.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'll complain a little
like
less.
Like I said, you know, I can't. As someone who's a fan of that genre, a fan of this series, it's not a game for everyone. It's not designed for. And like, I know accessibility is a big thing. But not everything has to be for everyone.
Yeah, see,
and it's okay to not like a game or want to play it, even if it's getting the critical acclaim that it has gotten. Because again, Twitter like reviews are biased, and they're gonna give it to the people who enjoy these games and who can play it and who can review it. But unless they dislike this entry to the series, it's going to get a good review.
Yeah. See, look, I will like when this is a bigger idea. Like, accessibility is not about difficulty. Accessibility, like there's been a lot of incorrect discussion this week around accessibility versus difficulty. Accessibility is allowing anyone to play it that can. It's all about equity, not equality. The idea is that no matter what your physical ability is, or your vision impairment, your hearing impairment, you can play the game. Now, that doesn't mean make the game fucking easy. It just means you make the game playable to everyone that can play it. That's a very different conversation difficulty. The accessibility of making a game easier, that's a whole different conversation, and I think it's being handled incredibly incorrectly. For me, they're not in the same space. Because there are plenty of people which are abilities challenged, or for whatever reason, they have some sort of challenge, they can still enjoy a game that's fucking hard. But yeah, they just may need a different way to hold the controller. They may need to change some understandings around the game, change the colors, or like, you know, have the color vision mode or whatever. Yeah, that's a site. Like, as someone that works in like, you know, supports, like, I'm associated with disability supports. The idea of just essentially cutting off people from playing it is very different. Like, just going, oh, you know, this game's too hard. It should be easier. It should be. It could be. Why not? I don't care. But it's not. In terms of the vision of the creator, I appreciate artistic integrity. But I think there's artistic integrity and there's being pricks. And artistic integrity is going, we are not changing it for no one, regardless of who you are. And it's like, hey, you know, look, our game is going to be hard, and no matter how you play it, it's going to be hard. But we've opened up these options for someone that needs to use the, you know, the adaptability, the Xbox adaptive controller, right? Or they need to make a custom controller that can only use one hand. That's cool. That's accessible. We've added this so people with color blindness can see things a little bit easier. Fantastic. That doesn't change the difficulty of the game. That just makes it more approachable.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I know I'm side tangenting again, but it's this whole bigger fucking narrative right now around Dark Souls, because I want to stress, at no point am I saying the game is too hard, or that I'm saying the accessibility of the game should be altered in terms of its difficulty. In terms of accessibility, sure, because using Horizon Forbidden West as an example, accessibility is up the wazoo, but you can still play it on fucking hard with all those other things. That is the answer. Not making everything easy so you can just walk through it. Because I understand the challenge of games and the interactivity of games, a big part of it. Sorry, I'm gonna preface. I'm tangenting. It's a late night, Max. I'm a bit fucking scattered, but my Ritalin ran out many hours ago.
Yeah, fair enough.
But hence my thought process a bugger. But I'm glad you're enjoying it at least. You seem to be having a really good time with it, and I like that.
Yeah, I think it is definitely my favorite of the series.
That's
to
good.
To be honest, I think that the openness and the fact that I can just go, like I said, although I'm essentially hitting my head against a different brick wall, it is a nice change of pace. Because sometimes you can just... Sometimes you need to step away from it and go, and then go back to it. And I did it a couple of times last night. You know, 3, 4, 5 attempts. I was getting instantly killed as soon as I was walking into the boss room. And I'm just like, I'm just gonna go do something else for 10 minutes. Went, did a few of the smaller dungeons, got some more stuff. Went back into the boss room. I hadn't leveled up, didn't change my gear. Walked in, beat it first try. It's like, well, I guess I just needed to go somewhere else and get it out of my mind for a bit and come back in with a you know, clean sheet.
Yeah, look, I can't argue that. Like, I appreciate... What's with the...
You are so bright.
What is this? The white balance in this camera is so dumb. Here, give it a minute. It'll fix itself in a second. For those listening on the audio feed, they're not going to care. There it goes. It tones down.
You're like it's some weird vampire that glows in the sunlight.
I know. I've got it on, like, for those playing at home, I have the camera set at a very specific order. Like, it's set at a particular white balance, right? It's not supposed to be scaling.
Oh, it's coming up again.
I know. It's because, like, if I put my hand up, it readjusts. It's just fine. It shouldn't be auto-detecting, but it is for some reason, and I'm fucking annoying me. But that's okay. But anyway, look. I understand, like, once again, the idea of beating your head to get there, and you run it a couple times to get better, because that's what I've been doing with Gran Turismo 7. So for full disclosure, a review code was provided to Max and I for Gran Turismo 7 from PlayStation Australia, so thank you to them. So I have spent a little bit of time with GT7 this week. Once again, as I expressed at the start of the show, my weekend's been absolutely fucking bonkers, so I've not really had time to sit down with it. However, it's good games, at least so far anyway, at least for someone of like, and like, I don't know how long from a long stretch, but at least in a short run I'm enjoying it. So GT7, the latest from Polyphony Digital, it's been in years in the making. Like, I don't even, was there, apart from the last one was GT Sport, and that was in 2017 around about there. So it's been a long while since Polyphony have released this. And so GT7 has always been primed as one of the biggest, the most prestigious racing simulation game. And this release marks the 25th anniversary of the franchise as a whole. So the game boots up in that same way. It goes, hey, 25th anniversary, here's an intro cinematic that goes, which made me laugh instantly, because it's like, it's been 25 years of Gran Turismo 7. So here's footage of cars from what feel like the 1400s. I'm like, what the fuck? And then the idea is to show you the history of cars and bring them up to the point they're at now. But like, prefacing it with 25 years and then showing as if this massive leap of car progression has happened in 25 years, it made me chuckle really hard. But yeah, this clip is like 10, 15 minutes long. It's unskippable. And like, as someone that relatively gives no fuck about cars, like if I was someone that had, you know, as I posted on Twitter, if you were someone that cars gives you boners, you would just be like coming profusely for this 10 minutes. Because it like, if you care about cars, car history, anything, like you will get a good time out of this. Because it's like all the nitty and gritty, it's showing the evolution of car design, all of it in this great little package. And then it ends with, it's the transitions from real world footage to game footage. And I think the idea is to go, look how good the game is. The game's almost real life. I'm like, no, it's fucking, the problem with the game is it looks better than real life. So like, I could instantly tell when it switched to gameplay. I'm like, this looks better than real life. Real life looks like shit. This looks fantastic. But yeah, look, so, and then it's got this weird, So a little weird thing, it's very text-based, it's very menu-heavy, which is expected in a simulating game. So they have kind of gamified at least a little bit, so it doesn't feel as super sim as it could be. There's a little world map screen where you go to a cafe and you get a menu which goes, hey, go collect these three cars from races. You know, there's your licenses, where the idea is you go and you literally have to earn your license in the game, because if you can't achieve these specific tasks, you won't get the license you need to go into this tournament, to go take on, to go access to these cars, etc. You have to kind of like prove your worth, which I'll get to that in just a moment. And then there's, you know, a used car a lot, so you can go and buy new cars when you go into these world rally races, etc. It's a cool little like mini world. It's like a little hub to fuck around in. But yeah, the license, let's talk about that first. So they're really easy. But if you want to talk like the easy in concept, it's like, all right, you're gonna test out your braking. You need to go from here to here and brake within this time limit. So then you have to take into account the speed at which the car can max out, or what speed you need to get to in order, and when to time the brake for it to come to a complete stop within that time limit. And like, it's down to the 0.001 of a second. Like, they go to the nth degree. So I spent an uncomfortable amount of time in the first four license things, because I'm like, I hit silver pretty much first time, bronze and then silver, like, and then I could get silver pretty consistently. I'm like, all right, but I need to get that gold though, wait. So like, I sit there and then I just fucking run this thing. Run it 1,000 times. And because it's down to like the 0.003 of a second, like it feels like you're just fucking caving your face in. You're like, how can I do this differently? It's taking a corner at speed and then braking and then turning. Like, how can I cut any time off it? But then when you do, and you get that gold time, and you don't just beat it, you smash it a little bit, you're like, yes, that's right, I do know how to take a corner in a fucking VW bug.
It's interesting, because the way full disclosure, I've watched the opening cinematic, because I said to myself, I've played Dark Souls for like 20 hours, I need a nice little change of pace, and my change of pace was watching the opening cinematic, and then me realizing that I'm an idiot, and I just want to play more Elden Ring. But it's interesting, the way you're explaining this to me is almost like you're walking up to a guy riding a horse and he's smacking the shit out of you and you're like, I reckon I can do this again, and I'm going to keep doing it again until I break properly.
See, but that's the thing.
But it's okay, because what's the difference? Where does your mind justify that?
The difference is that it's measurable.
But I mean, to a degree, it is measurable. His health bar will get lower and lower the more you practice.
But I guess even
in the gold medal is him dying.
But even then, like in the concept, like it's simple. Like you can break it down to its parts, and it's as simple as you need to kill the guy, or it's as simple as you need to break. Like you can break it down to its simplest parts. But like within taking on that boss, there are the level of variables that are there are greater.
I'm just being a dick.
No, but you are spot the fuck on, and that's kind of why
how you're explaining this does sound like how I attempt.
Yes.
Doing this,
and that's why I wanted to go to it. That's why I wanted to transition from Elden Ring to GT, because I know, and like I can tell it's part of my brain that like I cannot leave it unfinished, and that frustrates me. And I think that's what then with the extra spikes within Elden Ring, that annoys me because I can't do it. I can't get it together. You know, because like with a car, it's as simple. It's like I just got to run this turn a number of times. And like sometimes I'll slightly get better. Sometimes I'll slightly get worse. But like it's all within a relatable distance. Unless I just don't use the accelerator, I don't brake at all. Like I'm going to do it.
So,
but here, I walk up to this dude, and he's just like, dush. And then I'm like, all right, I'll drive over here. Dush. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost as if it's just, the track isn't trying to kill me. I'm beating time. Yeah, that is all.
Before we get too deep in it, when the game does boot up, you get asked how your control system.
Yes.
Your control system. Are you using the thumbstick, the D-pad, or the waggle controls?
Yeah. So,
the motion sensors. Sorry.
That's right. So as Max addressed, so it provides the three modes. So you can use the face buttons like X and O to sort of accelerate, or you can use the triggers at the back, or you can use the analog stick. Right thumbstick as like a throttle. Which, like, yeah, it gives you a bit more essentially what an idea of nuanced control, I guess, where you can kind of before we had the super sensitive triggers that we have now, it makes sense why it's an idea. So it depends on how you've played GT this entire time or want to. I picked triggers at the back and motion controls. Either like you can use the D-pad, you can use the thumbstick, or you can use motion control. Once again, depending on how you've played. Nothing would make me more angrier than using a D-pad. Nothing would make me more angrier than using motion controls. But a thumbstick makes perfect sense.
I super want to get a steering wheel.
I kind of do. I really do.
Want to get a steering wheel. But I need one that works on both consoles.
Yeah. Oh, if anyone just wants me to, like I said, I'll stream it. I'll strap it to this table and I will stream me driving in GT. So if anyone anywhere knows of a steering wheel and wants to like send me one a review and I'll send it back, I don't care. And just let me dick around with it for a while. And as someone that's not a racing fan normally, I think that might win me over. It might change it, actually. It might completely change my experience. But yes, that
definitely won't make me play the game worse.
Yeah. Because I know how to drive a car. I can drive a car pretty well. Which is fine. You know, for me, that would be a bit better. Bill, one of the other things that the game actually boots up with as well is this essentially rhythm-based mode. So you didn't see this, but like after the opening cinematic, before it throws you into the game, like into the world map, it throws you into this, I forget what the mode is called, but the idea is you drive to a beat.
Okay.
So it plays a song, and then, so there are two things you need to do. You need to get to the end of the song. So you need to get X amount of distance on the track before the song ends. However, you still have to hit the check marks. So it hits all the beats of your normal racing. And you know how normally when you play like arcade races, like it's like you have to get to the checkpoint in fucking 30 seconds.
Timer extends and whatnot.
Yeah, so like as you hit the check mark, it extends the timer again and then da-da-da-da. So the idea is like, you know, the gold trophy is 5.7 miles. And you need to get 5.7 miles in this car before the end of the song, or ensuring that you hit all the checkpoints. So if you fuck up, it's fun because like the first one is like a classical music with this nice kind of like thump beat behind it, and I'm just kind of like jamming it like as I'm trying to get to the.
The music rally mode.
Music rally, yeah. I've seen a fair few
people tweet about it. It's cool. Apparently it's amazing, yeah.
It's really cool in concept. It's a great new way because like knowing the GT is a real sim-based game, to have a mode that's a little bit silly and feels quite arcadey is a very nice touch. But of course, like the game does have all its deep and intense parts as well. You can go in there and spec out the complete specifics. Like I sent a picture to a chat with Max, myself, Paul James and Joel Grelton from Anagame and Paul from Player 2. And I was like, hey, I don't know what any of this means. And it's literally just the screen fills up with knobs and dials and sliders, and you can completely mod out the car to however you want. You can completely customize it from an engine perspective. So far, there's enough of it that's casual for me to enjoy myself. And I'd like to think that there's some back-end stuff to make it entertaining for those that are hardcore. But we won't touch, we won't know that specifically until we have a chat with Travis from the Drill Sense podcast in the coming weeks. Them, myself, and possibly even Max will be doing an episode of More of the Players. We will talk about GT7 from a noob and a professional capacity, as Travis is a GT championship racer. He has a team. He's all the nitty gritty. Hey, he has a wheel. He, you know, they love it. So it's that fantastic. But anyways, we'll have more to say about GT as we play it, because we're playing a handful of games at the moment now at the same time. So I imagine things will get a little bit backburnered.
Yeah, apparently March got just as busy as February all of a sudden.
Everyone tried.
I don't know when the bloody hell that happened.
Everyone tried to roll out of February into March, but everyone did it. So look, because right now, I can talk about more about Horizon, but Horizon is still Horizon. I'm still really, really enjoying it. I know you've kind of checked out from Horizon.
Like I anticipated, once Elden Ring came out, it's all I have thought about.
Yeah.
In my game playing time. It's just like, I just want to play more Elden Ring. I just want to be in that world. It's crazy.
See, for me, I want to play more Horizon. Because the story, there was originally a story beat that I talked about last week where everything went, whoa, who the fuck are these people? What are they? You know, in terms of it's a moment of, hey, there's new things here that are exciting. A little bit later on, another information bomb drops and you go, whoa. And especially coming off the back of just playing Horizon Zero Dawn, because if you hadn't paid attention, or if you didn't remember Zero Dawn too well, this story beat would be less impactful, I imagine. But for me, when they've gone boom, and I'm going, oh fuck, that's gnarly, and I love the idea of it. It's really, really cool. I don't know how it sees through yet, but so the more I'm playing it, you know, we talked about this last week. The idea is that you need to go and essentially rebuild Gaia after she has been broken down into its parts and scattered across the globe. There's a handful you got to collect. I've collected one of them. I'm on my way to the second. But doing so, you get to learn a lot about the tribes that are found within the Forbidden West, and I fucking love the tribes.
Yeah.
They are all distinctly different in how they dress, how they speak, how they what terms of worship they have, and it all plays into who they are. And sometimes it's a little on the nose, but I still kind of like it. So the idea is, you know, that there is a group that, very similar to how the Kaja in Zero Dawn, they worship the sun. So how they express themselves, what's it called? When you provide a reference for something,
endorse?
Not endorse. You know, when they use essentially comparisons, right? Someone dies and the sun has set, idioms, I think. The sun has set on them. Because, even in their reference to someone dying, it's all connected through to the sun. You know, and there's a tribe out in the Forbidden West, they're all about growing plants, and they're very based on the flora. So for them, they talk a lot about, you know, seeds and the growing of plants, and how we as a tribe cannot relocate because, like the plants, we are rooted here. This is who we are. You know, and even though, you know, you may have, you know, you may pollinate and spread around, but the base, the tree is still here. The roots are still here. I love that. It's absolutely fantastic, just in terms of how they communicate all through that sort of idiom, motif, whatever. Then there's another group that have seemed to have taken bunker within an old facility, and they have access to these old holograms and projections of the past, but they're all kind of distorted and corrupted. So they provide not all the specific details, and they have built this entire religion called, essentially based on the 10, and it's the idea of these 10 soldiers that achieved this thing. But they've pieced it together through the broken up holograms. And then at the end of the time, you sort of assist with uncorrupting the data, and they realize that part of the story that they have misinformed, well, not misinformed, but they've we've kind of picked up on the wrong beats. We have read is still within that expression, but we've kind of gone a little bit wrong. So when they start revealing all the missing pieces, they go, oh, cool. Well, let's make some minor changes to how we do things, because the 10 believe it to be different. you know, and then the Regala and her troops are really cool. I'm seeing more creatures now, more machines as the world opens. It's so good. The game is fantastic. And unlike yourself, who kind of died off on the story, that big story beat sort of reinvigorated me. I'm having access to more companions now. The companions are really filling in the little home base. Absolutely. Okay. Love it.
Well, that's good to know. Because, yeah, my whole thing was I was... And, like, I think I prefaced this as well last time I spoke about it, because it was a couple of weeks ago now. I just... Because... Zero Dawn was setting up a story. I found the story to be much more compelling because it got to its point, not necessarily faster, but in a more succinct way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Forbidden West, where the story's plateaued for a certain time frame. Like, obviously, I'm starting to hit those beats now. We had a chat after last week's show. I'm very close to where you are. I'm just a little bit behind now because you've played a little bit more. But I had that big oh shit moment, and that's when it's like, okay, I can now that I can see the story progressing, because for so long, it's just you're kind of just aimless. Like, you're not technically aimlessly wandering. You're just wandering to get to the point.
Yeah.
And there's that lull in the story where it's like, I can't do anything yet until this next point happens. And that was kind of just, it felt like it took a little bit too long to get there, because like I said, a lot of open world games do this. You have one big overarching mission, and for Horizon, it's you're literally saving the world, and it seems like everyone else is like, I get that you're trying to save the world, but I really need you to help me collect my sheep, or I'm not fucking opening this door for you. Like, that's like, obviously that's not a thing, but like, that's what it felt like. It's like, yeah, dude, I'm literally saving the planet and you're not going to open this door for me because you're just being a dick. Like,
yeah. But
whereas, like, you know, in Fallout, it's like, you need to save your kid, but I'm going to build a fucking town real quick.
Yeah.
I'm just going to build a town and then maybe I'll think about doing it.
But what I do love, though, and like, this is something that's seen in the trailers as well, if you pay close attention. So the companions that Aloy collects, she, during her searches, has essentially found a ton of focuses. So she passes those focuses onto her companions. So now, I guess, which is kind of the whole idea of the story that they're building towards, or the subtext, is that she's no longer alone. She was the only one that saw the world this specific way, or at least within her, that aren't people tried to kill her. So by sharing that knowledge and that power, she's giving it to, because the Gaia pulls her, the things that she has seen and experienced as part of the collective database. So it kind of makes everything that you've done feel important, even if it's just wandering over there. Like, hey, everything you've done is you are helping build Gaia. Even if you've wandered over there and just picked up a bunch of leaves, it's all part of it. It's all relevant information. And then as you talk to the companions and they're like, we're seeing everything that you've seen. We're learning about this, about that, about the creatures, about All Mother, about the Nora, you know, and it's kind of this great, it's become this great unifier, because so far I'm with one, two, three, four individuals aside from Aloy that's in this home base, and they all have very different backgrounds, origins, you know, they're all from different parts of the landscape, and they're coming together all with this collective knowledge. And I know it's like a big old hippy dippy idea, and I think that's where they're going. The idea is we can all come together with the power of knowledge to fix the world, and I think that's pretty accurate in general. But I think if you get, once you're done with Elden Ring, I think you'll get a kick out of this. But that's that. Like, we've been talking games for like what, fucking 50 minutes now? We've nearly done a whole show worth of just us talking about the games we're playing. But granted, they're three of the biggest releases so far of this year. So we can't fault it that bad. But anyways, Max, let's jump into the part where we shill for a little while. So let's shill about Manscaped. So Manscaped had jumped on board for the last month to support us and support you for viewing us and helping us out. So if you look below, there it is, Manscaped. So if you go, if you head over to au.manscaped.com and use the promo code FTP, you save yourself 20% off and get free shipping because Manscaped have reached out to us to promote the... The Lawnmower 4.0. It is the latest tool in below the waist grooming. If you want to keep your down under nice and tidy, you pick up that lawnmower there, help keep it all at bay. And then when you're done, you can use the cleanser, you can use the toner.
The weed whacker,
the nose trimmer, that nose hair trimmer. It's not on the shelf because I went and used it the other day to clean out my noses. Because it was getting all gnarly up in there again. I was like, meow. But another thing as well, which they have just released, which I did put an order in myself because I was completely curious, is along with the hair trimming, they also have sort of the hair grooming, they also have body grooming in terms of products. So they've released a line of deodorant, body wash, shampoo, a bunch of different things. So I was like, fuck it, why not? So I put an order in. So I've got the shampoo coming, I've got the deodorant coming, I've got the body wash coming. I was like, why the fuck not? Because like you know, the smells that they have, the essences, the odors within the ball toner, the crop mops, you know, everything about it. Like they smell good, like they smell nice, but still masculine, what you would deem as masculine. You know what I mean? It's not all like big, super fruity smells. They're not quite like woody, accepted smells either. But they do have a very specific scent to them. And I like it. So the idea of having all these other, hygiene products alongside it has me completely interested. Mostly because like I've used the same shampoo for years. I've never used body wash. I always use soap. And apparently body wash is kind of better for you. So I was like, well, I'll give the body wash a go. You know, it's a bunch of different things that I thought about. And I was like, you know what? Why not? What about you, Max? Because for those that can't tell, right now, you're rocking your Manscaped shirt. And you messaged me today going, hey, I went out and about on the town in my Manscaped shirt.
Yeah, I kind of forgot that I was wearing it, and I went out and I was picking up lunch and walking to the bakery and got a wink. I was like, hey.
Hey, she knows I got clean balls.
So that was good. Then I walked around the supermarket with it tonight. So I was like, eh. People, I'll say it proudly. Manscaped look after my downstairs area.
Yeah, I look
at my balls.
I look after myself. I keep myself groomed and, you know, yeah. Self-care. It's all part of it, you know. It's something you should be proud of. And with that, because like if you want to wear a...
He says this with this disgusting beard right now.
Well, you can use...
I'll have to shave before I go to work.
Well, maybe you should pick up the plow, you know, the little hand razor that I've got, which, you know, after the first time I used it, it destroyed my face. Second time, third time, not too bad. Like I just need to relearn how to use a razor with this, which is a single blade. But you know, look, they have the shirts as well. So if you want to go around promoting to the world that you keep your down below area in check, you can do that too. But only, not only, there's other ways you can do it too. But only if you go to au.manscaped.com and use the promo code FTP. The promo code's only got a couple of days left in it, by the way. So if you want to use it, now's your chance. Help support us, please. If you're thinking about it over the last month and you're like, I don't know whether I should. Do it. Even if just for us. You know, your front area will be happy. Your partner will be happy. You'll be happy because I can, you know, I'll tell you firsthand, you feel fucking fantastic when you take that little bit of time to care for yourself and how you feel and how you look. It's all this added extra layers of confidence. It's all come together. And then you've done the good thing knowing that you've supported, you've looked after yourself and you're helping support us. So there's that option as well. Once again, au.manscaped.com, promo code FTP, 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Manscaped! Looks after your dick. That's not the tagline that they use, but that's what we're going with. All right, Max, let's get into the section calling the Form the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation.
Well, let's kick things off with some Sony news about some secret prototypes. So Tweaktown has been keeping an eagle eye on Sony Interactive Entertainment's exports and has uncovered a ledger for 700 kilos worth of video game console prototypes shipped from its headquarters in London to Norfolk, Virginia. The package, made up of four cartons, was shipped on the 16th of November of 2021, Although unsure why it was sent to Virginia specifically is a mystery. PlayStation's main headquarters in the US is in San Mateo, although it does have electronic subsidiaries on the eastern seaboard. Maybe it was just a stopover before getting sent further through.
That is a lot. That's 700 kilos is a lot.
Hang
on, I'm vampired again, but you keep talking.
What does a PS5 weigh? Do you know? Top of your head? How many consoles do you reckon that is?
See, this is the thing.
There's currently a shortage in consoles, and they're sending 700 kilos of prototype consoles somewhere.
But it's the prototype part that's interesting. Now, this is because
they're all PSVR2 headsets.
Possibly.
700 kilos worth of fucking
like ones. It's got to be something new, because like, look, there's a PS1 behind me, and if you open that fucker up, it is a board with a disc on it. That's it. Like a disc tray, because like back in the day, the boards within those things were so simple. So if it's 700 kilos, it's either a metric, it's not a metric ton because that's not 700 kilos. It's a fuckload of old consoles like PS1s, PS2s, etc. because they're not heavy. Probably like three PS3 fats because those bastards were heavy, you know, or a handful of PS5s, like either, you know, or PSVR heads, PSVR2 headsets, like.
It's all the old broken PSPs that they can't move.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, like, well, what could it be? Why is it all together? Because, like, why are they shipping it all in the same space? It almost seems more dangerous than sending a bunch of individual packages to those that need them. Because, it's not saying dev kits. Because if we say developmental kits, that's very different. But prototypes, I guess they technically fall under dev kits, right?
Really. So the ledger itself says prototype console.
Yeah.
So.
And there's no new consoles coming out anytime soon that we're aware of.
PS5 Pro, baby.
But you can barely sell the one we have.
PS5 Slim.
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah. That's good. But, yeah. Well, look, you know what it probably is, though? Because, look, the next story here, Max, the PS3, it's fucking old. The console launched all the way back in 2006. I was still at university at the time. I was in high school at the time. I remember buying it when I was at university with Metal Gear Solid 4, and it was like $800. It was insane. So it's perhaps no surprise that Sony is wanting to pull the plug on support for the system and its peripherals, well, in Japan at least. You know, writing in its official Twitter account, the organization says, quote, sincerely apologized to gamers still using the device, but explained that it simply doesn't have the required inventory of parts to provide any comprehensive after-sales service anymore. Quote, after-sales service will be discontinued on Saturday, the 30th of April, 2022 for the PS3 and all PS3 peripherals due to an exhaustion of parts inventory, because they just shipped them in a fucking truck. A statement explaining customers who wish to have after-sales service for the relevant model should apply for after-sales service or through the online repair reception service or PlayStation customer support by Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Now, it makes sense, Max, because the PS3 is super old. I can tell you, I got one behind me. I got one on the shelf up there. I can't remember the last time I turned them on. I understand there are some people that haven't jumped to PS5 yet. That's fine. But PS4, you goddamn kidding me? How are you not there yet?
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, they're now two generations old. They need the space for presumably all the PS5s that they're making, hopefully.
Well, yeah, certainly have some anyway.
Well, Ryan, I know this is a big story for you.
Woo!
Sony has gone full anime. Pardon me. So following their $1.1 billion purchase of Crunchyroll, they are now combining the two services, that is Funimation and Crunchyroll. So Crunchyroll will be absorbing practically all of Funimation's content as well as its subsidiary Wakanim. Not everything will make the transition, though about 80% of all content will be moving across. Quote, starting today, tons of shows and movies from Funimation and Wakanim will begin arriving on Crunchyroll, so you'll get more dubs, more subs, more of everything, the blog post explains. Quote, that includes titles available now like My Hero Academia, Tokyo Ghoul, and Yu Yu Hakusho, alongside favorites like Cowboy Bebop and Mushoku Tensei Jobless Reincarnation, all under the one subscription. The good news is that all existing Funimation subscribers can get 60 days of Crunchyroll for free. You'll be sent a voucher to the email in the coming days. So take advantage of that, because the bad news is Crunchyroll is way more expensive than what Funimation is. So get ready for your subscription cost to go up.
Oh. So this is like, this is essentially now become the mega service for animes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really, really cool for those that give a fuck about animes. Like, great.
Yeah.
Like, if you want everything in one spot, that is, see, that's fantastic news. But like, yeah, with that comes a cost. And as you said, Crunchyroll is more expensive than Funimation. So, well, there you go. There you go. It was always on the cards. But what about yourself? Because do you have the anime streaming services?
I have a Funimation subscription, but not a Crunchyroll.
Oh no!
Because everything I watch was on Funimation, and like I just said, it is cheaper than what Crunchyroll is.
So then, how does this affect you? Are you comfortable with this change? With this new?
I'll probably ride out my 60 days free that I'll get, and then I'll reevaluate.
Yeah, because I guess if you jump in and open it up and it's like, oh, maybe there are some things on Crunchyroll that have caught my attention that I wouldn't have watched if they weren't combined.
And I mean, to be fair, the way Crunchyroll works is for free members, there's ads.
Yeah.
So you watch like two ads an episode. The big downside is for animes that release weekly, you cannot watch what they refer to as a simulcast, which is you can watch it as it airs live. You have to wait a week for the new episode, so you're Ooh. Always a week behind. That's the downside. If that's what you're paying for premium, you get to watch it as it's released.
That's, I like that.
That's
so, like, hey, we're not taking things away from you, we're just costing you convenience.
Yeah, so, and it's like yeah.
It's very,
it
very
would be cool. Like if Netflix had a higher tier subscription where instead of having to watch episodes week to week, they just dumped all the episodes in one go for you.
Mm.
Which I probably would do.
Yeah,
I like binging shit.
Yeah, binging is it varies the individual.
I'll pay for the binge.
Oh, Max, if you want to binge, this week Capcom announced the Resident Evil 2, 3, and 7 will all be getting PS5 makeovers later this year. There isn't a release window yet for new-gen ports, only that they're coming later this year. As stated in the original tweet, the PS5 versions of all three games will come with, quote, visual enhancements, and best of all, owners of the PS4 games will be able to upgrade for no additional cost. Now, Max, I love this because 7 is fucking awesome, but it looks a little bit raggedy now. So bumping that up, brilliant. 2, 3 looked damn exceptional. Bring them over to PS5. Mwah! Do I want a reason to play 2 again? Yes. Do I want a reason to play 7 again? No, I've already done it twice. 3? Yep. Why not? Maybe.
No, it's well worthwhile. These are three titles that are definitely deserving. I think they've made the right call. I do love a PS4 free upgrade as owner of all of those games.
All right, while you read the next one, I just got to jump out for one sec.
Be one I don't blame you.
Read ahead now.
So, guys, we spoke a little bit earlier about how the PS3 is really, really old. Well, guess what, guys? In just over a week's time, Grand Theft Auto 5 is being released again on its third generation of consoles. GTA Online, which will be available separately to Grand Theft Auto 5, will be making its leap to PlayStation 5 on the 15th of March. So, just over 2 weeks' time. Rockstar Games has finally given us a few details on what to expect, and it seems as though the studio has added some more bells and whistles to the game. The PS5 version of GTA 5 will feature three visual modes you'll be able to choose from: Fidelity, which is 4K ray tracing at 30 frames per second, Performance mode, which is an upscaled 4K with 60 frames, and the Performance Ray Tracing, which is upscaled 4K with ray tracing targeting 60 frames per second. The new version will apparently benefit from all kinds of enhancements and improvements, such as more densely populated open world, improved lighting, bigger explosions, much more. On the PlayStation 5 version of the game, the haptic feedback and adaptive triggers with the DualSense controller are supported, so is 3D audio. Faster load times naturally part of the deal. As for GTA Online, the PS5 version will have an overhaul onboarding section, a tidier front end, like mine, and that should make
just
a
like
much
Manscaped, yeah.
And that should make for a smoother experience.
Hot.
It does. furthermore, any progress you have made in GTA 5 and GTA Online on the PlayStation 4 can be transferred to your PS5 version. All you have to do is upload your data to the cloud via the Rockstar Games Social Club. However, GTA Online will be available as part of a PlayStation Plus subscription for, I believe, the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. There is no word, however, on whether or not your base PS4 version of GTA 5 will offer a free version. It may be a purchased upgrade or a repurchase entirely. So you will get online for free as long as you claim it within however long they give you. But the base game may cost you.
Yeah, this is interesting. So like when I saw this post and I was on the blog as well and I read it and I was like, you kind of want to play GTA again because I really do love the GTA 5 campaign. I think it's fantastic. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I really, really like it. And all these extra features make it seem very tempting, especially performance modes and even performance ray tracing. Like, because that's why, if you can somewhat combine the performance and the fidelity together, then everything's coming up Millhouse. The online stuff, because the online looks pretty raggedy. So what I'm hoping is that very similar to how when World of Warcraft went from... I think Lich King.
Burning Crusade, I believe.
There was a couple. There was when they completely rebuilt all the models.
Might have been Cataclysm.
Cataclysm was the one. They went, we're rebuilding everything. So like we know this game's going to go on for years. The old models are old. We're going to redo it all. And I hope they've done that somewhat here because the PS, like once again, a game that went to PS3 that got ported to PS4, you can tell it's a PS3 game. But hopefully now it's not going to look like a really high-end PS3 game. I'm not too sure. But I don't know. I still have the GTA saved on my console because occasionally I want to dip in the online and I occasionally want to do the heists and stuff and they're fun. And you and I have done them before. But I'm also very aware that even right now with Horizon and GT7, I need more SSD space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's both my hard drives are full.
Yeah. It's
kind of regretting only getting a 1 terabyte solid state drive.
Yeah. But we're learning pretty quickly. Like, because we were told that the games were supposed to be getting smaller.
Those bitches are still expensive.
Like, we're told the game's supposed to be getting smaller, which they are.
I mean, they are smaller than their PS4 counterparts.
Yeah, but they're still pretty hefty. That's right. Then Max, you want to do the quick biddies? Because I know how you love to do the quick biddies.
I will do the quick biddies because I've got a few extras pulled up that aren't on our Word document. Let's kick things off. Haven, a fairly old game, has a new free update available allowing you to choose same-sex couples.
Hey! Shout out to that.
Uncharted movie has hit over $225 million at the box office.
Bonafide success!
So getting more Uncharted movies. Ghostwire Tokyo Prelude is a free visual novel that is currently out on PS5 and PS4. This is set as a little precursor to Ghostwire Tokyo, which is releasing later this month. And it is set 6 months before the events of the main game.
Which is pretty cool because like the whole idea is the world just changes drastically. In Tokyo. So the idea to have a little bit, hey, this is how things got to here. Because especially like we admittedly they've given us nothing about Ghostwire, aside from that one sort of like focus showcase. But even then it was mostly gameplay and not really story set up. And with it coming out in a couple of weeks, there's not a lot of time to really drop some setup. So this is a great way to do it.
NBC's streaming platform Peacock has given a series order to the upcoming Twisted Metal TV show, according to Deadline.
Now, I don't know who has the run for Peacock here in Australia. Like an example, like HBO Max, works out of Binge, which is Foxtel. Stan has a lot of deals with like AMC and Stars. Well, Stars is technically through Disney now. So I'm not sure where Peacock's going to show up.
So according to Google, Peacock is not available in Australia. Although in 2019, NBC Universal, better known as NBCU, signed a multi-year agreement with News Corp. That agreement ensures News Corp Foxtel has exclusive streaming rights to NBCU content in Australia.
There you go. Well, that goes in. Yeah. So then the answer is because Justice League is a Universal. That's Warner Brothers. Mm. That's wrong. Okay, that changes that. Yes, but News Corp. So then it is 100% coming to Foxtel or Binge.
And lastly, just for Ryan, Machine Gun Kelly will be a player character in WWE 2K22, which is launching next week.
So, a couple extra things as well. So, very similar to like NBA 2K a couple of years ago when they had Eminem and Jay-Z as like executive producers of the soundtrack, Machine Gun Kelly is doing the same thing. So, what they're essentially doing is they're having him as the face of the musical taste for the game. So especially right now with Machine Gun Kelly, who musically I'm a big fan of personally, not so much, but they're using songs from his latest album, which, Tickets to My Downfall, which has Body Bag, which is a great song with him, Youngblood, and Burt McCracken from The Used. Concert for Aliens is one of the other songs that they're using on there as well. But it's also got, like, Bring Me the Horizon, The Amity Affliction. So like it sets the tone very quickly about what music we're going to be experiencing in WWE 2K22. So we're looking like a pop punk, metalcore sort of feel, which is right up this old emo kid's alley, man. Like, it makes me so happy, and like, I'm pretty excited for WWE 2K22 anyway. And then knowing that, even though I love his music personally, he's a bit of a dickhole, if someone can give a tombstone pile driver to Machine Gun Kelly in a game, bow, thumbs up for me. But as we did mention, that is one of the games that are coming out this week. So here are the other games that we'll see. So Submerged, Hidden Depths, PS4 and PS5 on March the 10th. Aztec Forgotten Gods, PS4, PS5, March 10th. WWE 2K22, March 11th, PS4 and PS5. However, if you buy the premium edition, you can play it on the 8th. Phantom Breaker, Omnia on PS4, March 15th. And as we discussed, GTA 5 is coming to the PS5 on March 15th. Max, I see you giving absolutely no poos about any of those games this week.
You'd be correct.
So yeah,
I'll dip my toe into WWE. They're always, you know, good fun.
Look,
hopefully it'll be interesting to see how what changes have been made after their year off.
At least from where it's at right now, so that they've been really good in terms of promotion in the last couple of months. So there's a lot of hands-on previews that went up last week, which got me all excited. There's been a lot of like direct gameplay showing, you know, through safe channels like Up Up Down Down, which is Xavier Woods, or Austin Creed is his shoot name, through Up Up Down Down, showing off actual gameplay. They've got the GM mode. They've got the showcase mode with Rey Mysterio, you know, one of the most seasoned and well-respected and admired wrestlers ever to exist ever. So like, it looks as if they're going to be hitting a lot of really good beats, a lot of the right beats. It looks better. Whether the controls are intuitive, whether it is there's not much you can do to make it not better than 2K20. So I'm feeling very positive, even though I don't really watch WWE too much anymore because I'm not liking the show that they're delivering, but I still respect the wrestlers. I still like the wrestlers, and I'm very excited for the game because as AEW does not have a game right now, if I want to play wrestling, I'm going to have to play WWE, and that is the game that I will be picking up this week. And I'll just add it to my list of Horizon and GT and Elden Ring. And I'll give another belt. I'll keep going there. But there's a couple of games on my list, and then of course Tiny Tina's later in the month.
I'm so excited for Tiny Tina's.
Yeah, you want to play Babylon's Fall? You know, there's for some reason, there's a couple of things coming out this month that will still keep our attention. But
so we're on Final Fantasy Origins: Stranger of Paradise is out later this month.
Yeah,
another Souls-like.
But yeah, good times. What we're essentially saying, viewers, fans, listeners, watchers, don't go anywhere because we've got a lot more shit to talk about in the coming weeks. So thank you for taking your time
and
to
I mean,
listen to us.
And I mean, I will be talking about Elden Ring for the next like 5 weeks.
Anyways.
So wrap yourselves in, ladies and gentlemen.
Look, we've taken up enough time. We want them to hang around more, but not right now. We want them to hang around next week and the week after and the week after that. But if they have enjoyed and they've you know, they didn't hear the bit at the start, next, how do they find us?
Well, everyone, this PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review, which you can now also do on Spotify. If you are watching us on YouTube, be sure to leave a like, a comment, and subscribe. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopcultures, as well as our merchandise store, popcultures.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. And of course, you can help support the brands and help support us. And that includes, at the moment, Manscaped. Head over to au.manscaped.com. Use the promo code FTP for only just a couple more days. You get yourself 20% off anything and free worldwide shipping. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players.